archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Women's Resource Center in Racine celebrates their 40th anniversary at Meadowbrook Country Club on Saturday, August 12th. Enjoy a night out featuring cocktails, meal, live entertainment, and auctions. Call 633-3274. Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's. Visit andreasgifts.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, books, and more. Now offering online ordering from Jack's Cafe. andreasgifts.com.
Here at WGTD, we're proud to be part of Wisconsin Public Radio's News and Classical Music Network. But when you're in the mood to hear more about the issues that matter to you, WPR also offers its Ideas Network on 90.7 WHAD. Talk shows about Wisconsin issues as well as those facing our nation and the world.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD, and this is our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. Today, we're welcoming our listeners to join us on a talking or virtual tour of historic sites in the Racine downtown community. The Racine Heritage Museum is holding Saturday walking tours highlighting the historic places and events of the downtown Racine area. Did you know that the most notorious criminal of his time, John Dillinger, actually robbed a Racine bank in 1933? Did you know that a runaway slave by the name of Joshua Glover was rescued from a Milwaukee jail by members of the Racine community so that he could flee safely to Canada? Did you know that the Racine Harbor was once the fifth largest shipping community on the Great Lakes? As we take our virtual tour in the next 40 minutes, we will be hearing from Executive Director of the Racine Heritage Museum, Chris Paulson, who will shepherd us through some of the history of Racine in southeastern Wisconsin. You may find that you would like to take the actual walking tour yourself, and we'll tell you later how you can do that. Welcome, Chris, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks
today.
For having me.
Before we begin our talking tour here, I just wanted to ask you how you came up with the idea and how this began.
I wish I could take credit for it. The idea was brought to us by a good friend of the museum, Jim Wardrip, who has experienced a number of different historic walking tours in different communities and really saw the need for one in Racine and the benefit that is backed by the science that tells us that when people come to a community and they take an opportunity to learn about that community's history, they're more likely to return to it.
Yeah, and there's that old tell me, I forget, show me and I remember, and involve me and I learn. And this walking tour is really involving people in
That's
the
exactly
community.
It.
So if someone wants to, after this program, they say, boy, I'd like to take that walking tour, how do they get in touch with you?
There are a variety of different ways. You can visit our website at racineheritagemuseum.org. You can call us at 262-636-3926 and ask for Christiana Schlitz. She's the one that is she's the master of tour scheduling and can help you through the process. Again, or you can do it right online. It's very easy.
Great. Super. Okay, the first stop is the Racine Heritage Museum, which was built in 1903 as a Carnegie Library and converted to a museum in 1962. And I give you that background because at every stop we can't do everything that's on there. So we're going to talk about the museum itself at the end of our virtual tour. So we will begin on the second stop after beginning at the museum at Memorial Hall, which was built in 1925 in memory of Racine's servicemen. It cost in current dollars $524,000 to build. One of the highlights at this stop, Chris, is about the lighthouses. What can you tell our listeners about the lighthouses in Racine and that history?
Well, we all know that the Wind Point Lighthouse is such an iconic representation, of the community. But there are a number of other lighthouses. There have been five others through Racine's history that have served along the lakefront. The first one, the very first one, and actually the very first brick building built in the community, was the Root River Lighthouse. And that was located near where the public library is now, quite a ways away from the where the river river mouth is now. But the original course of Root River kind of swerved south from where it is now, and kind of you know, sort of along the lake shore and then out. There's a natural bluff that you can still see, where you can kind of, if you're taking a look at the landscape in the area between Memorial Hall and the library, where you can see where that original river went out into the lake and where that lighthouse would have stood.
Hmm. Yeah, in fact, one of the early lighthouses was called the Bluff Lighthouse, I think, right? We can't cover everything at every stop, but I also thought you just alluded to something very interesting there, which is called the original location of the river. Did we actually change the location of the river?
We did. We stabilized it. You know, there's the natural channel is you know where it is today, but that because of you know just the shifting sand and the shifting lakeshore, that the river could. You know, like I said, it bent south. I mean, it just changed. And so in order to make it navigable to ships, they dug out the largest of the channels and kind of continue to clean out the harbor and make that, dredge it out so that large ships could get into the city, into safe harbor. And that's where the river mouth, sort of stabilized to where it is today.
Huh. Okay, listeners, now we'll go on to stop number three, which is the east side of Lake Avenue between 6th Street and Sam Johnson Parkway. And, of course, this is the site of so much history of Johnson Wax, which you can really further explore at the Racine Heritage Museum. He came to Racine, and they started, actually, I believe, with a parquet flooring, and then they went on to wax.
In 1886.
Mm-hmm. In 1986. And have, of course, been a real strength to our community. It's also the site of a memorial in honor of astronaut Laurel Salton Clark. Do you want to tell our listeners who may not know the history of Laurel Salton Clark?
Laurel Clark was an astronaut who unfortunately died in the explosion of the Columbia space shuttle, and in 2003. She was not born in Racine. Her family moved to Racine when she was in high school. She spent 2 years at Horlick, and those 2 years in Racine must have had a tremendous effect on her. She always referred to Racine afterwards as her hometown, and it was such a place that was so dear to her. She became a surgeon. She just had this amazing career. She was a naval surgeon. She was able to. She learned to fly, and then eventually became, you know, fortunate to become an astronaut. The decisions that she made in her life and the work that she did is what we celebrate with an exhibit at the museum, and that's you just got some wonderful stories about her and her relationship with the Racine community.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very. Very much, she really kind of embodies the spirit of what we try to showcase at the museum.
Yeah, it was such a terrible loss. There's a very nice picture there of her husband and son visiting the fountain, which is something really nice to see. And kids run in that fountain. It's a tribute to her and her love of her children and of children in general. I was just. For your information, I was director of communication at the Racine Unified School District at the time. And when that happened, I got calls at home just from all over the country asking what we knew. And, of course, nobody quoted me, which they shouldn't have, but we found some teachers who remembered her, and they were besieged by the press. And it was very sad for us. She also went to the church that I go to, which is Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church, and her mother had gone there too. So Okay, let's move on to stop number four on the southwest corner of Lake Avenue and 5th Street. A main highlight of this area is its transformation from the fifth busiest port on the Great Lakes to a recreational harbor and the creation of Festival Park. What prompted that whole change, Chris, and the creation of the museum, of the marina itself?
Well, really, it just follows the transformation of the community in general. Racine, when we reached this stop, we talked about Racine County as a major wheat producing and shipping center, when it kind of started in the 1800s, and what a busy port that was, mm-hmm. to get wheat that was grown in the western part of the county shipped out to the east. And after the economy transformed to much more industrial economy, and shipping was not so just that kind of declined as a result or during the process of that, and so by the 1970s, by the 1960s and 70s, products were being shipped by rail and truck, mm-hmm. a lot more than by boat in the Great Lakes. And so the harbor was eventually decommissioned and turned into a recreational port. And, you can see that today. It's just a wonderful, bustling place.
And another great tribute to a great man, Len Zolkowski, who really pushed for this marina to happen and against the wishes of a lot of people, especially west of the eye. But what a legacy for him too, and how different when we moved here, the lakefront really wasn't developed, and the comparison to today is just amazing. There's another famous incident at this site, and the John Dillinger, the great outlaw of the time. Tell our listeners about the John Dillinger story. He actually ended up robbing a bank here, didn't he?
Well, the building where Racine Art Museum is today was a bank, and 1933, John Dillinger and his gang robbed that bank and took a few hostages. one in particular, I had the pleasure to meet Ursula Patsky, who she saved a pair of shoestrings that we have in the museum that were used to, I guess, bind her hands while she was being held hostage. It's a terrible thing to rob a bank and to take people hostage, but the memory of somebody like Dillinger is so colorful, and in her recollection, she just remembered him being a very, kind of a nice and friendly and courteous person, but
they gave him, in fact, he gave them a hat or a shirt or something.
Yeah, it's just a very interesting story that, Dillinger has, his story rolls from Chicago all the way to, to Northfield, Minnesota, and all over the place. And he's one of those kind of legends now. Mm-hmm. But Racine has its part to play in his story.
Yes, a little claim to fame here. Okay, we go to our next virtual stop tour, which is number 5 at Monument Square, which was originally called Haymarket Square, and it was kind of created by Gilbert Knapp, who was one of the original founders of Racine. So I wonder, there's another thing besides the great monument on Haymarket Square, which is a stone, a commemorative marker, at this site of Joshua Glover. And some people may be familiar with that story, but I'm surprised when I talk to people, many people are not. So what's the Joshua Glover story?
Well, Racine County has a remarkable history in terms of its abolitionist activities during the years leading to the Civil War, and its role on the Underground Railroad movement, where we've been able to document that there were maybe 100 or more escaping slaves that came through our community from the west end to the east, and were aided in their efforts to escape slavery on ships that would take them to northern ports. Joshua Glover was a man who had escaped slavery in Missouri and was living and working in Racine at a sawmill on the Root River. When federal marshals arrested him, backed by the Fugitive Slave Act,
and they took him to, they were going to take him to prison in Racine, but the prison wasn't enough to hold him with, you know, all of the abolitionist fervor that we have here, or had here. And so they took him to Milwaukee, and along with a big crowd from Milwaukee, a group of people from Racine went up and broke him out of jail, got him onto a wagon where he spent 2 to 3 weeks and 133-mile journey from place to place around Racine and Walworth counties, and eventually onto a ship, and you know, where he sailed north to Canada, and he was able to live out his life.
You know, what was interesting to me about that story, too, is that he had been working here. I mean, he had a job here, and we had, as well as the abolitionist, you know, fervor, we had a lot of anti-slavery advocates here. Mm-hmm. And so it seemed funny to me that they would swoop down and take him when he's working, and he's in one of the northern states, and it was surprising.
And these were prominent people.
Right? Yes.
So they put themselves at tremendous risk for their beliefs and for their passions. And eventually, the Supreme Court of the United States became involved in the Wisconsin decision that the Fugitive Slave Act was unconstitutional.
And we were the only state to declare that
the Supreme
unconstitutional.
Court, right. They had a decision against the state of Wisconsin, based on this the Joshua Glover case, that but the state refused to accept and file it. That's the mm-hmm. first and only time that's ever happened.
Wow, it's a real tribute to, like you said, they were prominent people in the community who not only were so anti-slavery, but they went up and they broke Joshua Glover out of jail there and got him north. So it's a sad thing that happened. I mean, that was the history then, but a wonderful thing that we had enough advocates here to really fight it. That Civil War monument was put up in 1884 at that site, and that's a real tribute to the soldiers, too, at the time in the Civil War. Okay, stop six. We may not get through all 15 stops. There's so much interesting to talk about. That site has a lot to do with the theater community, and we still are a very strong community for the arts, but they housed the Blake Opera House. What was going to the movies like back then, Chris? Not that you were there.
But yeah, I don't remember. Well, there'd be a day of it. I mean, you go and see a newsreel, you see a couple of features, and I, as they say, all for a nickel. But the fascinating thing about the theaters here is that, for me, the sheer number and the amazing architecture of these things.
Oh, yes.
Between 1883 and 1928, nearly 35 or more theaters.
Wow.
Film and performance theaters opened in and around just the city of
mm-hmm.
Racine. There's more throughout the county, of course, but we're just looking at those numbers. Four in particular, the Granada, which is on the north side, the Venetian, which is just a legendary theater in the community, the Majestic, and the Capitol, all these beautiful ornate
wow.
theaters, all four of them opened within 2 months of each other in 1928. And there wouldn't be another theater built in Racine until
yeah.
1968, when the Westgate was
wow.
created.
And it's interesting because I remember being young and going to the movies, and they would show newsreels still. So I'm pretty old. But also they had dancing there. And
the vaudeville performance, all
yeah.
kinds of different things.
Wow. I'm going to quickly go over step seven, I think. We're now at the southwest corner of 3rd and Main, and there's a lot here in the history of the buildings there. The McClurg Building, the Secor Block, that was called Main Place. Ivanhoe has, interesting, if you go there to have a dinner or something, that was actually purchased by a ex-prize fighter, I believe. What's the importance of that block at that time?
Well, for me, it's just that McClurg Building, which is now Main Place, is in its history is home
mm-hmm.
to one of those theaters, to Racine's first public library, and to a Turkish bath.
Wow.
There
Very
are
interesting.
So many stories tucked away in mm-hmm. every little building downtown.
Yeah. Stop number 8 brings us to the northwest corner of 3rd and Lake, and it brings to mind shipwrecks and life-saving stations, and also, of course, the historic Dukovin Center. I was surprised that there apparently were many shipwrecks. And what are life-saving stations?
Well, there is a reef out there about 2 miles mm-hmm. out, and it's a dangerous reef.
Okay.
And the Coast Guard eventually developed a permanent presence here, and that's the life-saving station that you'll see from this view. You see it across the river. It's on the north side of the harbor. And also with this view, you'll see at this stop, you'll see where the Congress Hall Hotel, it's a beautiful hotel, was located. Uh-huh. And
was that eventually raised?
Yes.
Okay.
The connection that has with Dukovin Center to the south, which is not part of the tour, is that at that time that Dukovin was Racine College, and Mary Todd Lincoln had come to Racine with her son to check out the college to see if it would be appropriate for her son to attend. And during her stay in Racine, she spent her time at Congress Hall.
And he never ended up coming here, did he? No. But that's a very interesting story to have her here. Mm-hmm. And also I heard that the statue to Mary Todd Lincoln is the only one in the country that has both her and, is that right? And him in that statue.
The one in front of Gateway.
Mm-hmm. It's really worth stopping to see. Okay, we're moving on to stop number 9. We may make it to 15. That's the southwest corner of State and Lake. Reminds us of how Racine was once called a small motor capital of the U.S. What are some of the businesses, Chris, and why was Racine kind of so amenable to the creation of businesses and factories?
Racine is an amazingly diverse community, and it is diverse in terms of its population and people that brought amazing skill sets from different parts of the world to the community. We were very fortunate that these folks were just, very creative, very inventive, and very strong entrepreneurial spirit in the community. And the diversity of its manufactured products is just astonishing over time. The small community with this diversity of manufacturing has a synergy that creates mm-hmm. more products and more innovations that just appear. At one time, there were, or over the course of just a few short years, there were like 250 different fractional horsepower motor manufacturers. Many of these were just tiny little garage, companies making little products out of this motor that. Those are those little electric motors that you find in hair dryers and blenders and everything else. They were invented here in the community in Racine. but those companies also include Hamilton Beach and Oster and Andis, which is still around, Multi-Products, and Sinkerator. The list just goes on and on of producers of these fractional horsepower motors. And so we share a lot of detail about that. And we talk about, a lot of the other manufacturing. From this view, you kind of see a cradle mm-hmm. of area manufacturing where, Case had a place and the threshing machine company started. And you can see a lot of other places where.
I heard a speaker once who was mm-hmm. talking really about creativity. But she said there are certain points in history or certain places where all this creativity springs from, and one thing she credited it to is what you mentioned. These people sort of bounce their ideas off of each other. So you have a few manufacturers, and then other manufacturers come, in this mm-hmm. case manufacturers. But she said it's true of the art community or writers, mm-hmm. The group of people in the early 1900s who got together over writing in the Renaissance period. And so it makes sense that would have happened here.
Absolutely. Twin disc started with clutches that were used in agricultural equipment, which was manufactured here. Modine built you know, designed and built a heating system for Nash cars. These companies, people work together, and they used each other's talents and to create new products. It's just an amazing story, and it continues.
And it continues. And I would, you know, I'd really encourage our listeners to go look at these exhibits, because the one on Mitchell Cars is very interesting. You know, most people don't know we made cars here at one time. How did that start? I think he was Scottish. He came from Scotland.
He was a wheelwright. They made wagons, and you know, as time went by and technologies became available, they developed, you know, they started manufacturing automobiles as well, and even motorcycles. It was through the Mitchell Company that the four-wheel drive system, the invention of the four-wheel drive system, is also, it's unique to Racine, but that was invented for some trucks that they were manufacturing. But the first self-powered vehicle in the United States was built, not the first car, which is, you know, was made in Europe, but the first one in the United States that we can document was made by a man named Carhart when he was living in Racine in 1870. Huh. So we've got a
rich history.
Yes. And cars were manufactured here by Mitchell, by Nash, Case, and of course Carhart had his, Pierce. There were a number of different manufacturers here.
Amazing. Okay, the 10th stop on our tour is the southwest corner of Maine and State. It highlights Western Printing, it's called, in the copy from the museum, the post office, and Western Coil. And it's interesting here. There's a little side story about, you talk about diversity of manufacturing, but this Dr. Shoup created a product, restorative nerve tap. That he was up to 2,000 bottles a day that they were manufacturing.
From this vantage, we were able to talk about we were in Western Publishing, where those golden books we all grew up with were produced, and Western Coil, which is related to the it's part of this, you know, the Mitchell and Lewis family that manufactured the automobiles, also went into, you know, the electrics business, made radios and things like that, but. Yeah, patent medicines are always kind of fun to talk about, and we had a major producer of those things. This is back before, you know, the FDA
stepped in.
Existed, and so,
what was in that product?
As far as we know, just alcohol and opioids. And then,
so see, all these years later, we're dealing with an opioid.
Yeah, it's this,
when I read your brochure about that, there's an interesting brochure, or maybe it was a poster. But it's a prompt relief for headaches, neuralgia, toothaches, earaches, nervousness, sleeplessness, and every box was warranted for 25 cents or something. Just a little side on this stop. There's a story about how men here refused to shave their mustaches during World War II until the Nazis surrendered. So that was just a little aside at the stop, but I thought that that was, we've always had sort of activism in the Racine area, you know.
Yes, you do.
With Underground Railroad and into today, where we're talking about sanctuary here for people who are being rounded up, I guess. So step 11 brings us to the corner of State and Wisconsin, the site of the J.I. Case Company. We were actually called the cradle of invention by some people. Go ahead.
Yes, and that's a theme that will resonate through the tours, that you're going to run into names of people and names of companies that are, for anybody in the community and anybody coming in from outside, you're going to find that there's a lot of familiar names here.
Mm-hmm.
Our products reach far and wide, and that's the thread that holds the story together. Mm-hmm. You'll hear about, we'll show you the headquarters of J.I. Case Company, the threshing machine company, and where, you know, in 1842, actually the company started in Rochester, the western part of Racine County, in 1842, and just really changed 5,000 years of agriculture, you know, rather suddenly, and they continue to produce these, you know, innovative products that help us get food from the ground to the table. And It's just it's.
It is.
It's remarkable to talk about. And they had such a Case was down on the lake, and so they had a they did their own shipping. They had just an amazingly huge campus, and you can kind of see the whole of it from this vantage.
Stop 12 brings us to the northwest corner of 3rd and Wisconsin, and again, it's a lot about the buildings there. There's D.P. Wigley still operating today, the Journal Times, which I'll ask you a little more about, and the Number 5 Firehouse. We pretty much had a newspaper for quite a few years, I believe. Is that right? And it went through several name changes.
Yes, but the Racine has had a newspaper continuously since 1856.
Wow.
And there were at one time two or three, but that the Journal Times is really the continued. They can trace their roots back that far.
It's wonderful. I think it was first called the Racine Daily or something. The Racine Daily at first, and then they had several name changes.
Yeah, there were a number of different ones. The Daily Journal, I think, is the earliest name.
And what did D.P. Wigley start out as? Are they still doing what they were originally doing? I think they were fertilizer.
Yeah, they boiled flaxseed for oil and did a it was a pretty big concern. That building is amazing. At least five stories. I believe there are five stories, and they go way down from the road to the river. And so there was at one time a railroad that went right past and right through part of the building.
Wow.
Where they could get products loaded onto a train and would,
amazing.
Right. It's just absolutely fascinating. The folks that operate that, the Flynns, really have done a lot to kind of preserve the character of that building.
And then stop 13 is the pavilion area on Water Street, which includes more of the Case Company history and the river's commercial use. But the Fifth Ward kind of got known as a melting pot. How did that happen, Chris?
Yeah, you look across state to that Fifth Ward, which is an area that's bounded kind of behind State Street. It's bounded by industry. On the north and on the west and on the south, and then the harbor on the east, and it is where people came to this country when immigrants came to Racine for many generations. It's the first stop. It's the gateway neighborhood where people coming from first the Danes, but the Italians came, the Armenians, and then every generation there's a new kind of dominant minority in that area. And people are still coming. It's where people would go, and they could have ready access to factory jobs, and they could get an affordable first home, and get integrated into the community through this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. I think some of that too, the fact that we were such a diverse community, it did also impact on some of the activism that happened in this area, because certainly as you're dealing with different races and different cultures, you're going to think that slavery makes no sense at all, or that confining people who shouldn't be confined. There's still a real stream of activism, I think, in our community.
Right, and you've got a lot of children of immigrants growing up together,
yes.
And immigrants from different communities, particularly during the middle part of the century. David Curtian, an author from Racine,
yes.
Who grew up, he's the children of Armenian immigrants, and he has such a powerful memory of growing up in that neighborhood. He's written a number of books about the experience and a number of stories about people he knew growing up that are really, really give you a sense of what that sort of melting pot neighborhood would be like.
Right. It's interesting. They say that there's more prejudice, or there's less prejudice, I should say it that way, when people grow up with all, different kinds of people speaking different languages, diversity of skin color, diversity of background. And so we move on to the stop 14. We have two left, so I guess we're going to get them all in. Stop 14 is the southeast corner of Park and 6th, where the YMCA building stands. And the Blake Opera House existed, too, at this corner. And I think we've kind of talked about that, unless there's anything you want to add about that stop. I think...
You see some... We had a YMCA very early.
Mm-hmm.
Racine also was able to have a YWCA.
Yes.
Very early. And for a town this size, we talk about... Some other features of the community. We support a theater. We have we support museums. We have a community that takes great pride in itself, you know, over its history and invests in amenities that are attractive, quality of life amenities. And for a town this size to have, you know, a YM and a YW in the early part of the 20th century is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful zoo, all kinds of wonderful things.
And
this ties right back to those, you know, creative, entrepreneurial,
yes,
industrialists that made sure the community was a quality one.
Yes. And you mentioned RAM, and reading your things, I see that they have the largest art and crafts collection in the nation. I was very surprised at that. Okay, our last stop. I mean, I'm not surprised they have amazingly beautiful, wonderful things there. They do, but the largest in the nation, that's pretty impressive. We end up with our last stop at the northeast corner of 7th and College Avenue. And what's highlighted there is three churches, Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church, but it was really known as the Good Shepherd Church. And then First Presbyterian, which has history with, and St. Luke's, which all three of those have histories with the Underground Railroad. But
right.
An interesting story here to me is that of Olympia Brown. She was actually minister of Olympia Brown, but named after her, of course, after she left, but of the Good Shepherd Church for 9 years, 1978 to 87. And what was her importance to Racine and even nationally?
Well, she was the first female ordained minister in the United States, and a very important figure nationally in the women's suffrage movement. So she was an associate of Susan B. Anthony and, you know, other leaders in that effort. And so she's a nationally important figure that comes to Racine and leads the church.
And she brought others with her, didn't she? Who were some of the people that they'll recognize? I think she brought Susan B. Anthony,
mm-hmm,
and Stanton.
right.
And what are the links of these churches to the Underground Railroad?
The membership in these churches were notable figures at the time in the community. The leadership of the community largely occupied those three. There's a very strong history of... very strong community memory, particularly at the First Presbyterian Church, of quite a bit of effort among the congregants to support the Underground Railroad movement. There's some suggestion that the building itself may have played a role. That hasn't been determined forensically, but again, very strong community memory about their role in the movement.
You know, they said it's so hard to document the Underground Railroad because it was so secretive, so they purposely didn't make any records.
Right, but at the same time, some people did, and later they did talk about it. And, you know, the good fortune that we have is that the prominence of the people that were involved, particularly in the Joshua Glover case, they got national attention. They got in a lot of trouble for what they did, but, you know, that also provides documentation of their efforts. There is also communication between a fellow named A.P. Dutton, who had a warehouse on the river, and others about his role. And
they said Dutton's building may have housed some of the fugitive slaves.
A hundred? Yeah,
over the course of time. He was very anti-slavery, mm-hmm, that's just amazing. So many of our buildings, other buildings in town, including First Pres, may or may not have, you know, housed people. But Okay, we want to end up with going back to the museum because I know, Chris, you have some exciting things coming up. And again, as you went through this tour, you'll really want to go to the Racine Heritage Museum and see some of these exhibits. So you have a new exhibit coming in August. What would you like to tell our listeners about that?
Yes, the first Friday in August, we'll open an exhibit commemorating Racine County's entrance into World War I. We've got some wonderful, you know, artifacts that we've been really looking forward to sharing with the community, and that will open the evening of first Friday in August. Come to downtown Racine for First Fridays, and you'll see that. In September, at the September First Friday, we will open an update to our waterways exhibit that features artifacts that were salvaged from the Palmer, Racine's last fishing tug that Randy Vosh, who did the salvage operation, was kind enough to provide the museum. Those are going to be going on exhibit in the context of a story on Racine's commercial fishing industry.
That's super. So is that the first Friday for the opening too?
That's the first Friday in September.
In September. Yes. So, and it, by the way, if you want to just walk around Racine at a wonderful time, any first Friday and during the late afternoon and evening, people are strolling the streets. I think, is the traffic still off during that time? But the museum's open. It would be a chance for you to stop in and see some of the wonderful things that we've talked about. And then we'd like to also pay tribute in a way to your education program. For years, you have really taken a lot of children and adults in to learn more about their county. So, what are some of the programs that you're doing now that are?
Our audience is about 30,000 people annually. About 6,500 of them are involved in education programs in one way or another. We just had every first grader from Unified come through the museum. We have been piloting some wonderful intergenerational activities with schools and with senior centers, and those seem to be they have tremendous potential. So we're going to continue to work on those. We have classes from all ages that come visit the museum every year, and we have programs that we tailor just for the particular curriculum that the teacher would like. We go out to visit schools. We go out to visit senior centers. We're all over the place.
And you still do the 1888?
Yes, we do. We have a schoolhouse, a one-room schoolhouse that we operate on 5 Mile Road and Highway 31 in Caledonia. There's a program we offer for. It was generally a fourth grade program, but late third and early fifth are also welcome.
And there are school marms there, mm-hmm. and you sit in an 1888 desk.
That's right.
It's an interesting experience. We're closing here, but Chris, I wanted to ask you if you wanted to let people know once more how they can get information about this walking tour, and if there's anything else that you'd like to say quickly.
You can contact the museum via the website. It's RacineHeritageMuseum.org. You can give us a call at 262-636-3926, or you can come and visit. The museum is open 6 days a week. We're open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5. We're open Saturday from 10 to 3, and Sunday from 12 to 4. The tour times are Saturdays at 10:30 in the morning and at 1 p.m. and You do need to get a reservation in. So, again, take a look at the website. We're running Saturdays through September 9th this year.
Fantastic. So, again, just quickly, if you didn't have a pen and you do now, the museum phone number is 636-3926. The tours are Saturdays 10:30 and 1 p.m. It's said that if we do great things, it is because we have stood on the shoulders of giants. I'd like to thank our guest today, Executive Director of the Racine Heritage Museum, Chris Paulson, for your work in helping us to better understand those people and that history, which has brought us to where we are today. For your good work, Chris, and for being with us today, I thank you.
Thank you very much.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and I hope you will join us here at WGTD every Saturday morning for this program as we explore the important subjects that touch our communities. Because as we all know so well, community matters. Take care.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies